This is West Virginia Public Radio. It's 7:35. Today we conclude our series about keeping the state's youngest citizens in West Virginia. We previously looked at the reasons why some people feel compelled to leave, but today we're taking a more positive approach. As Beneduccio reports, there are many young West Virginians with ideas about what can be done to help people stay.
From 1990 to 2000, and then again from 2000 to 2010, West Virginia saw slight increases in population, according to U.S. Census figures. But there's also some bad news when it comes to population stats. According to a report titled West Virginia's Young Talent, a Statistical Portrait, written by state demographer Christiotti, between 2000 and 2010, the state's population of people between the ages of 18 and 44 decreased by about 7%. This isn't good news for people like Paul Doherty. He's the president of Philanthropy West Virginia, and he works with Generation West Virginia, an organization that strives to serve the needs of young professionals in the state.
Yeah, over the past decade, since I got out of undergrad and came into the workforce in West Virginia, is that I noticed the separation, that discussion for decades now about how young people were leaving. And everyone complained about it, and even I came from Doddridge County. People said to me, go travel the world, go out of state, go to other parts of the world. These issues, these problems, these challenges will be here 30 years from now. Deal with that when you come back. And I was a bit stubborn, saying, why should I leave when we can address it here and now and try to develop a career and opportunity?
Generation West Virginia has put together a strategic plan to keep young people in West Virginia. This includes determining what issues young people care about and cultivating relationships with organizations who promote these issues, as well as improving relationships with groups that represent young people.
My name is Rosangela Reed, and I work as a real estate legal assistant for a real estate attorney here in Morgantown and bartend part-time. I think Charleston is a good starting place, but it's the capital, so you have government, you have more hospital systems, you have more, you know, chemical jobs down there. They also have a ton of activities. It's a thriving place for young professionals compared to when I lived there. They have something going on every weekend.
It's these kinds of things, cultural opportunities, that several young West Virginians say are lacking.
Well, my name is Jillian Kelly, and I bartend at Bent Willie's in Morgantown, and I run the lingerie shop Dahlia's on Walnut. I mean, I often think about moving to Pittsburgh because of the art scene, you know, because there's so much more. There's galleries, there's just so much more going on. We really don't have that here. I mean, and it's a shame because we have a lot of great local artists, amazing local artists, you know, and you really don't, I feel like they're kind of wasting their time here because they could be doing so much more, but they, I'm sure, want to live here like I do. I want to live here. I like living here. But it's, you know, I don't want to live in Pittsburgh. No offense to Pittsburgh. I really don't want to, but like it's, when that's what you want to do, you know, you kind of have to go where that is. And here it's just, it really isn't. And it's a shame because there are a lot of artists here.
But it's also about building a community for many young West Virginians.
I'm Ashley Lawson. I'm an assistant professor at West Virginia Wesleyan College, and I'm 32 years old. I guess maybe you could call it quality of life, as far as having access to the types of things that one would want for that would make for a good life outside of employment. So access to arts or to museums or to communities of people who are, you could consider your peers. I think that's one thing that I've noticed here that hasn't been the case necessarily in places that I've lived, in other states that I've lived, that we do seem to have a smaller demographic of people in their late 20s and 30s because those people have had to go elsewhere. So I think the more of a community that develops, the more people will be attracted to come back and join that community.
No matter the reasons why people leave or why they choose to stay, younger West Virginians do want the state to succeed, and many want to be a part of the process to help transform the state into something better. Again, Paul Doherty.
We have to go back to how we package ourselves. How do we communicate ourselves? We do need to expand our job opportunity. We need more private venture opportunities, whether they are small entrepreneurial-based or larger efforts. We need diversity. We are a state rooted in the natural resource industry. It's a culture. It's our culture. It's important. But at the same point, we need to look at all the other options that diversify the jobs opportunity. Because we don't need to be based in one economy. We need to be based in multiple economies. Hollywood's not going to be based here, but you're able to bring some type of that business into the state.
Well, I'm Heather Sammons. and I live in Morgantown, West Virginia, and I'm currently unemployed. It's going to take all of us to rebuild the state, and it's going to take us coming together as a community and going, okay, these are the problems, this is what's causing the problems, how do we fix this to really make us a strong state that we can really be proud of?
And perhaps the biggest reason why they feel the way they do is because they recognize how unique West Virginia really is, like Jocelyn and Matt Crawford of Charleston.
I'm Jocelyn Crawford, and I'm a native of Charleston, grew up here. I'm a teacher at Nitro High School. I teach science.
And my name is Matthew Crawford. I'm from Bell, originally, now I live in Charleston.
It is not 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon here.
No.
It is like 3 degrees of Bob Wise.
Yeah.
You can get to Bob Wise in 3 people, I'm pretty sure.
Everybody that I work with knows my youngest brother.
Yes.
It's so weird. Like, I know people talk about how small the world is, and then you get to West Virginia, and it can't be any smaller. It's so nice that everybody knows everybody, and everybody likes everybody, and that's something else about West Virginia that's nice.
Yeah.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown.
You can listen to the entire series at wvpublic.org. The series and WV Next in 6, a digital project, are an outgrowth of an initiative called What's Next West Virginia, a series of conversations about West Virginia's economic future taking place in communities across the state beginning this June. To get involved, visit whatsnextwv.org. This is West Virginia Public Radio. It's 7:42. Your forecast, mostly cloudy today with a chance of showers, highs in the 50s and 60s. For Friday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers, highs in the 50s and 60s. And for Saturday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers, highs in the 60s and 70s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by Mountain View Solar, locally owned and operated, committed to the growing demand for alternative energy in the region. Information at mtvsolar.com.
The West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection announced last week that they are seeking public comment on what should be included in the rules to regulate above-ground storage tanks. Glennis Board spoke with the director of a Morgantown-based environmental consulting firm about the rulemaking process and brings us this report.
Evan Hansen, director of Downstream Strategies, has been at the forefront of public reaction to the January chemical spill in the Kanawha Valley that left 300,000 state residents without access to water for days. Hansen, in cooperation with other experts, has authored reports analyzing the spill and has also testified in Washington, D.C. on the matter. He says the approach the DEP is taking to the rulemaking process isn't typical.
Usually they would provide a draft and ask for public comment on the draft, but in this case, they're actually asking for suggestions from the public before they even come out with the first draft.
The rules are required by Senate Bill 373, also known as the Water Resources Protection Act. Ideas can be submitted to the agency via email or written mail by May 15th. Hansen says the next point of interest in this process is one of transparency.
I think it's important for any interested party that submits comments for those comments to be posted online so that everybody could see what's being suggested before the DEP puts out their first draft.
Hansen points out the hotly debated issue of exemptions, which will likely be folded into the new regulations. He says during the 2014 legislative session, there wasn't enough time for lawmakers to make informed decisions about which industries could get exemptions to rules and to what extent.
But now that we have a year to write the rules, you can be sure that different groups are going to be vying to get their industries exempted.
Hansen says some exemptions make sense if regulations are already in place to sufficiently monitor or control storage units, but making sure nothing slips through the cracks, so to speak, should remain an important priority for rulemakers. Hansen also points out that determining fee structures for storage permitting will be an important factor to watch for in the rule drafting.
So that's important because if DEP doesn't have the resources that they need to effectively implement this program, then it's not going to be successful.
Meanwhile, Hansen and his firm, Downstream Strategies, is working with several organizations to draft their own suggestions on above-ground storage tank regulations for the DEP's consideration. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glennis Board in Morgantown.
The small town of Richwood, West Virginia, once had a booming lumber and coal economy. But since the 1980s, most of the jobs in town have left the area, as have 42% of the population. Every dollar is needed here, and the town relies on its annual Feast of the Ramson to help rejuvenate the local economy each April. Traveling 219's Roxy Todd traveled to the ramp feed, and she brings us this story from conversations with two young people in a town with a disappearing population.
Inside the cafeteria, the air is saturated with the smell of ramps, a pungent, garlicky, peppery smell, so strong that it eclipses everything in the room. A local musician, John Wyatt, is playing a song he wrote about the Richwood ramp feed.
When the maple mugs turn red on the hillside, and the harvest trees...
17-year-old John Bard is one of the 100 volunteers raising money for the Chamber of Commerce by working at the ramp feed.
It's just packed. Everyone's here and enjoying the food and enjoying the celebrations and looking at the crafts and stuff. I mean, it's nice to see the town this packed like it used to be before I was born. I was born in 1997. My parents have been telling me all the time about how big the town used to be back when my older brothers and sisters went to school here.
Where there's ramps, to say the least.
Outside the Richwood High School, I meet 11-year-old Tyler McHugh. He's selling fresh ramps that he's dug with his family. Tyler says that he never wants to leave Richwood, though he admits that he might have to if he wants to find a job outside the coal mines.
We're in Richwood, West Virginia, at the ramp feed called the Ramson. I love this town. I love it. It's not very big, not very much, but it's just home. You can go half a mile up the road, catch your fish, dig your ramps, and just up here enjoying my time selling ramps and just having fun with my family. Yeah, I'll never leave it.
You'll never leave it?
I'll go and go somewhere where there's more jobs. There's mines and stuff up here. But I don't really want a coal mine because then I won't be able to spend time with my family. But I could always go do that or make my own business. But I want to be a lawyer. Yeah, I go to college for a game warden, too, up at Monongahela National Forest. I'd like to be one there, be a park ranger.
Tyler McHugh says he sees some people who come from out of town to dig ramps. He's worried that they're taking more than the forest here can sustain.
Overpickers, you know, they like dig every ramp they see. See, you can't do that here. I mean, you can dig a lot of ramps, but you can at least leave some roots behind, that way they'll grow. Keep your ecosystem and all that going. Keep the ramp cycle going. Be able to feed your family. We'll be able to keep having this good ramp feed up here in Richwood. Everybody enjoys. I enjoy it.
When the maple buds turn red on the hillside, and the sarvis trees are blooming in the lane, and the ramps begin to grow in the mountains, then I know that it's springtime again. When the ramps begin to grow in the mountains, then I know that it's springtime again.
Welcome. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback at wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Dave Mistich.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by State Electric Supply Company, your full-line electrical supply distributor. Online at stateelectric.com.